I'm Marco Werman, and this is The World. We begin once again in Manchester, England, where there was that suspected suicide bombing at the Ariana Grande concert on Monday. 15-year-old Olivia Campbell was one of the victims. Her mother spoke today at a vigil just outside Manchester.
This is such a hard time for us. I had to come. I didn't know what to do. I don't know where to be. I don't know what to do. I just knew something told me I had to come here. I can see Olivia's friends there. As a family, we're united, we're standing strong. I ask her friends, strangers, relatives to do the same. Please stay together. Don't let this be any of us, please. Don't let my daughter be a victim.
As Britons unite in their grief, the investigation into the bombing has caused a temporary rift between Britain and the United States. All this week, British officials had been sharing intelligence with their U.S. counterparts, but some of that information ended up being leaked to and published by some American news outlets, and British Prime Minister Theresa May was upset.
We have a special relationship with the USA. It is our deepest defense and security partnership that we have. Of course, that partnership is built on trust, and part of that trust is knowing that intelligence can be shared confidently.
Earlier today, the British government announced it would stop sharing intel on the Manchester attacks with the U.S., but after U.S. assurances, that sharing looks set to resume. For his part, President Donald Trump has promised an inquiry into the leaks and prosecutions if necessary. My colleague, the BBC's diplomatic correspondent, Jonathan Marcus, has been following events. What has been leaked so far, Jonathan?
Well, a whole litany of things that have been leaked. This is the extraordinary thing. The casualty figures, the attack method, the name of the suicide bomber himself, the news of the arrest of his brother, and of course, most extraordinary, the actual crime scene pictures of the device and the bag in which it's believed it was carried, which were leaked to the New York Times yesterday. And what's unusual, I think, about this, you know, it's just not a single leak. It seems to be a whole pattern of leaks to different American news networks or news organizations.
Yeah, and it's that kind of tail end of these leaks going to these media outlets here in the U.S. It's also been a source of big anger, incandescent anger, I heard from one report.
Indeed. I think this is hugely damaging. Certainly the police and those closest to the investigation feel that this is wholly inappropriate and actually detrimental to their efforts. I think particularly the early release of the name of the bomber. Because obviously the concern now is that there's a belief that there was a network involved. Indeed, the bomb maker himself may still be at large. And so there is a great concern and a great urgency to push on with things to forestall the possibility of any second attack.
How damaging are these leaks likely to be?
It obviously has a damage in the relationship between the US and Britain. Both President Trump and the Prime Minister, Mrs. May, have taken pains to stress that they, you know, they want to get to the bottom of this. The President has made that very clear. But at the moment, it's a slightly tense relationship. Mr. Trump, shall we say, is an unusual American president. He's not the kind of American president that British governments are perhaps used to dealing with. And so this adds another layer of uncertainty. I should say also that it was interesting that President Trump chose to, in his response, to set these leaks in a wider pattern of leaks from the American intelligence services. Clearly, his administration is, if you like, the target of some of those leaks. So it is all a slightly unusual picture, and one wonders who was leaking this material and why.
That was my BBC colleague Jonathan Marcus there. It's one thing for an official from law enforcement or an intelligence agency to leak material. It's another for journalists to decide to publish. In this case, that decision fell to the New York Times. We asked the Times to comment, and they sent us this statement. The images and information presented were neither graphic nor disrespectful of victims and are consistent with the common line of reporting on weapons used in horrific crimes, as the Times and other media outlets have done following terrorist acts around the world. And it continues, our mission is to cover news and inform our readers. We have strict guidelines on how and in what ways we cover sensitive stories. Our coverage of Monday's heinous attack has been both comprehensive and responsible. So that leads to the question, when should a news outlet publish this kind of material? Andrew Seaman is the chair of the Ethics Committee of the Society of Professional Journalists. So the Times statement focuses on the issues of taste and respect for the victims. How does that mesh with your guidelines on crime scene images?
I think it, you know, I've seen the images and I think that, you know, their selection was consistent with what we've seen elsewhere. It obviously doesn't really show graphic images. I think it shows some smears of blood and obviously the weapons used. So it's not something that you wouldn't expect to see after sort of a horrific event. Obviously, in the aftermath of the bombing, there were pictures of injured, wounded people. So sometimes, you know, that could be more graphic. You know, what I think is obviously a big concern here, too, is the nature of sort of the security aspect of this. You know, does this impact national security? And I'm sure that the New York Times sort of takes that into account.
Well, I mean, there is some concern, especially in the UK, that the publication of this material could compromise the investigation of a very serious crime. What do your ethical guidelines say about that?
Traditionally, what news organizations do is they usually go to security officials in the United States with sensitive information to say, you know, does this actually, you know, harm our efforts or put the U.S. security at risk? And I would assume that in this case, the New York Times would do that because it is such standard practice. You know, their statement doesn't address that, but typically that's what happens. One of the society's core tenets of its code of ethics is minimize harm. And we like to think of that holistically. So part of that is to think, you know, how does this harm people directly, but also in a larger sense? So in this case, it would be, you know, does this put sort of the nation's security at risk?
The New York Times story included technical details on the bomb and detonator. Couldn't that impact the minds and behavior of the bomber's co-conspirators, especially the bomb maker? I mean, it could even give the bomb maker a sense of what the authorities have not discovered, couldn't it?
Possibly, but, you know, with something like that, it would also be something to talk about with your sources, because this is not, you know, they're not general assignment reporters typically who are finding this thing, these things out. These are reporters who are working, you know, diligently with their sources that they've cultivated and gotten to know over the years. So, you know, possibly, but again, that's something that you would talk to officials about.
Do you ever worry that, you know, details on bombings like this that make it into newspapers are so tantalizing that they can be seen to drive profits?
I think so. You know, I think there's a lot of people who view most news organizations and media organizations in that light, that most of their stories are driven that way. And I think we've maybe seen some movement toward that, especially with cable news. But, you know, I think most journalists, when they go to work and, you know, they're showing up at meetings and they're working on stories, they're not necessarily thinking about that. I think most of them are very much thinking of, you know, getting the truth out there and getting good information to the public.
Andrew Seaman, he's the chair of the Ethics Committee of the Society of Professional Journalists.